to go back to DuPont a little bit,
mm-hmm.
What was the expectations there in terms of kind of quality and quantity of work to be done? I know that you do publish several papers
mm-hmm.
from your time there.
Well, I think the expectations were more or less the same as it was in an academic setting. Jim Gaylor was our supervisor. He was in charge of the group that cholesterol membrane biology, and he told us many times that we want you just to do good work and make contributions to the field to the fields. Be interactive with the rest of the groups in life sciences, so that we neurosciences and immunology, so that we, you know, kind of learn a little bit about what each one is doing, maybe make a contribution on this side to something like that, where we have a cohesive sort of group, kind of like three separate departments. There were only six principal investigators in the group that I was in, and I think there were like eight in neuroscience and 10 or 11 in immunology. So it wasn't that large. So it was like three small departments, let's put it that way. But he was very supportive in terms of supplying money and for equipment and supplies and technicians. We each had a full-time technician. We could attract if a postdoc, and there'd be money available for that. We had we were resources that were part of the experimental station were available to us in terms of, you know, sequencing, protein sequencing. At that time, not so much, there wasn't automated DNA sequencing, but synthesizing probes and protein and peptides, monoclonal antibody facility, things that were mostly found at larger institutions, but we had them there at DuPont, which helped us and our technician and other people focus attention on, you know, doing the actual lab work without having to create reagents or some of the more service-oriented work. But it was still small. Each laboratory was small, you know, like there was me and a technician, and I had half of a postdoc that I shared with another guy, but it was on a collaborative project. And then actually I shared a technician too with that other guy. I had one and a half technicians. So it was fun. And the level of science investigators there was good. There was another, Harry Chan was an established investigator in cholesterol metabolism, had been at the Jackson Labs in Bar Harbor. He too came to DuPont. So here was someone who at one time was more of a competitor with Joe and Mike, although there are no competitors. But I guess some people thought that there potentially was some animosity there, but I never detected that at all in Harry. And because he and I had been in common arenas, then we got along very well, and even I don't think we collaborated on anything, but we were very beneficial for each other in terms of ideas and experimental results and the like. Jim Traskus, established investigator, he's still there. Jeff Bilheimer, another cholesterol person working more on cholesterol sterification, an established person in the field before he went to DuPont, and he's still there. I think the others have left. So in the meantime, DuPont now has merged, or that life science group now has become a biotech company, and then that DuPont biotech company has merged with Merck to form this third entity called DuPont Merck, which on paper is separate from DuPont, although the building's right there in the experimental station. So there's DuPont, then there's this building that's called DuPont Merck, and then there's all of Merck over here. And I think that this arrangement was going to last for about 5 years, and then both of the giants would figure out what they wanted to do with this other one. And I think that's probably being discussed right now. But it's a pharmaceutical company at this time, and they're screening drugs and looking for agents and all. But it was a rewarding experience, and I enjoyed it. It's just that I thought that there was limited potential to continue along that. And I was right.
Well, you know, when you took the job at Southwestern, it was a job you wanted to go into biochemistry, and here was a position you really didn't have that much of an idea of what the research being done in the lab was.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're choosing to go into a very clinically oriented, the cardiovascular unit at DuPont.
Right.
Well, not clinically oriented, but there's clear clinical applications, and this is an industrial environment.
Mm-hmm.
And how much has clinical, kind of the clinical side of questions factored into the kinds of decisions you make, research on research programs and research questions?
Well, first of all, let me say that cardiovascular might have been part of the title, but mm-hmm. as we were told, and I believe that there weren't any pushes to get us to be more clinically oriented or drug oriented or so. And so to answer to your question, I don't think a whole lot of that I've been influenced by whether a particular topic was clinically relevant or part of an important disease process or public health issue, whatever. And I think it's nice to think that I think I said this yesterday, it feels good to think and say that contributions that I make from my laboratory work has helped people and suffering and disease. But that's about the extent of my feeling about it. It just feels good to say that. I mean, glad I did it, but you know, I don't look for projects that are focused on disease. I have two major projects in the lab. One of them now is focused on a disease because that's just where my interest lies, and the other is completely basic.
Okay.
There's not anything applied connected with it. You know, I tell study sections that just because there's not anything now doesn't mean in 6 months we're not going to make some discovery which will open it up and make it more applied, because that's what they want to hear. But it's just wide open, and I think that just the pursuit of knowledge is enough for me. And my own, I can't stress the importance it is just to be satisfying it is for me to know at some point in the future that I went to a laboratory, set it up, established research projects, and made contributions based on my skills and not only skills in the laboratory, but skills as interacting with people who were working with me and in writing grants and in leading experimentation. And whether that's a project that involves studying a transfer RNA modification in bacteria or a genetic disease that causes neurodegeneration is not that important.
And how did becoming a kind of an independent a PI at DuPont after being a research associate change the kinds of questions you asked and how you conducted your science, how you did the research?
Well, I tried to pattern a lot of what I did in the types of experiments that I are the philosophy at approaching a problem after Joe and Mike, even to the point of setting up a lab on the same sort of framework that they had set up. I mean, I think it'd be stupid not to. But at the same time, I stayed away from the questions that they were and the topics that they were interested in pursuing. So they were interested in the LDL receptor. So I said, well, I'm not going to do anything with the LDL receptor. They were also interested in studying HMG-CoA reductase, which is the key enzyme in cholesterol biosynthesis. Well, I still had a lot of interest in that, but I tried to suppress that interest because I knew that there wasn't any reason to, or unless I could come up with a real foothold on something that gave me a really good head start, then I wouldn't do it. And that's in spite of the fact that there were other people in this group that were studying molecular regulation of HMG-CoA reductase. So it would have been easy for me to get involved with their projects, but I just kind of stayed away from it. So the things that I did pursue were more, once again, on the circumference of the field of cholesterol metabolism, that being things like uptake of mevalonic acid into cells, or this new genetic disease that imparts impaired cholesterol movement that was kind of apart from the LDL receptor or LDL regulation. It was more of a cell biological dilemma. How does the cell move cholesterol around in the cell? Not what does it do when it gets there, or how is regulation accomplished, just how does it travel about? It's an insoluble molecule, so it doesn't freely diffuse like other things. So that's the project that Laura and I initiated together and that she's still working on. And so to be able to use my knowledge about that I learned about cholesterol metabolism and the experiments that could be done and the techniques that were involved in studying cholesterol metabolism from the years in Dallas, but apply them to these other projects was really beneficial. And essentially, in a lot of respects, it's just doing the same experiments, the same assays, but it's kind of plugging it into a different system. But that makes it easier. So, still drawing upon that core of knowledge, but yet doing something completely different, rather than just calving off of a part of a project that they had and start doing it. These were things that I devised on my own, you know. What's common is lots of times, and doesn't happen all the time, and I don't even know what frequency is, that postdocs, when they leave a lab, will take part of a project with that lab. And sort of like we call calving off like an iceberg, you know, that the principal investigator will say, okay, well, I'm no longer interested in this part of what you were doing. You can take it off. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't happen that way. Mm-hmm. But I devised my own projects. You know, I knew I was leaving, you know, for several months before, and so I began to think about things I wanted to do. And there were a couple of, oftentimes, this is another tangent here, but oftentimes when we're working around, you hear about an observation, or you know someone who's studying something and has made some initial observation that you could follow up on easily, that they may not have the skills to do, or the technology, or the manpower. So, but you could do it or I could do it, you know, with what I knew and the assays that I knew. And it's nice to have that opportunity to really do those for this fragmented philosophy, you know. And that was a good time to do that. So I had like three projects that I took to DuPont that, you know, that I could fit into. One of them came from an observation that Monty Krieger at MIT had made after he left Dallas. He was a postdoc. We were in Dallas for a long time, a good friend of mine. And he had made this observation, and we'd talked about it, and I said, well, that's something that I could probably follow up on, and maybe something really informing you there. And sure enough, I did. And the second one was this, originally this mutation in mice that caused this phenotype that imparted impaired cholesterol transport in cells. That was something that, you know, I could plug my skills and assays into, and that blossomed into this field Laura's working with now. And the third one is this transfer RNA that I started all that time ago. Actually, which was, if anything, was a calving off. That was a calving off of something that I did about two-thirds of the way through my tenure with Joe and Mike, was to show that this modification existed in eukaryotic cells as it did in bacteria. But the function for it is still unknown. So began to study it from the standpoint of an antibody, made my first antibodies to that back at DuPont. And carried them and still doing that.
Well, how motivated were you while you were at DuPont to seek collaborations, either with outside other kind of DuPont-like institutions or to make contacts with the academic community?
Well, I was I didn't seek a lot of collaborations because I thought I had some anyway. You know, I was starting up a collaboration with Laura, and then although Monty and I were talking quite a bit because he's a pretty interactive fellow, but you know, his lab wasn't doing any work on this little project that I was working on, but he still was actively involved in it intellectually. I kind of stayed away from the collaborations at DuPont because I just, number one, I didn't think that they weren't appealing, and some of them were in direct competition with Joe and Mike, which I thought was a big mistake. So I guess I had all the collaborations I wanted, but I did, in the first couple of years all the time I was at DuPont, you know, I went to Dallas about every 2 or 3 months and went to the medical school and talked to them just to bounce ideas off of them and tell them what I was doing. Not, I really wasn't keen to know what they were doing, but I wanted to have someone that I could share my experiences with and get some input on what to do next. And if there were any new developments in the field that might have bearing on the things that I was doing. And they were very supportive at that time, as they've always been. I don't go down there every 2 or 3 months anymore. You know, I kind of got gradually weaned away from that. In some ways I wish I would, but I haven't got time to go down there every 2 months or so. So the only academic contacts I had, the academic contacts began with Tufts Physiology, but that was more social at that time. It wasn't scientific discussions. I mean, I knew what their projects were, but I didn't ask them for advice, or they didn't ask me for advice. It was more just kind of cocktail party language. But back and forth to Dallas was a real benefit for me in those months at DuPont.
Well, when you entered the program at Tufts to get your PhD, were you already set on the kind of research you were going to ask? How much flexibility were they going to allow you to kind of continue research that you've been thinking about even before you went to DuPont and then continued to carry out at DuPont?
Well, fortunately, I identified a lab that Fred Dice, Paulo Dice, who was secure in his own position and financially and intellectually and egotistically, that he would allow me to bring in a project that was unrelated to his work and do it as a PhD dissertation. I turned down the opportunity to go to another lab that's more renowned, but would have not given me that flexibility, just because of the fact that I will, you know, preferred to think that I was more motivated to do the things that I was interested in than what somebody else was initially interested in. But knowing that I could get interested in something else, but initially I was motivated to do this. So Paulo was a real lucky find again. And still supportive as a senior member of our department. And it still gave me the opportunity to continue the intellectual collaboration with Laura on Neiman Pick C, which is kind of, in a way, pursuing my own ideas because, you know, I had kind of a good framework of what I thought was going on in this disease. And she shared the same framework. So, you know, through her experiments, kind of, or her lab's experiments, you know, fulfilled that drive.
So how did you adapt to going from a person who had been in school for a long time and a PI at DuPont with pretty, I imagine, a hefty salary to now integrating yourself back into the hierarchy of the lab?
Well, integrating in the lab wasn't a problem because I just started work, and that's So when I was at DuPont, you know, I worked in the lab just like I worked in the lab when I was a technician. I mean, that was my job. So it wasn't that much different to go into graduate school and take a few courses, yeah, but still just continue to work in the lab. But, you know, just there were a lot of limitations in, you know, the money that was available to me to buy. I mean, I was doing this project on the side in somebody else's lab who wasn't really funded to do that. So money wasn't much money to fund it. You know, I kind of had to make all my own reagents and get by as cheaply as possible. And that was frustrating and oftentimes discouraging. And then not having anybody to help me, you know, i.e. a technician, which I was used to at DuPont, or services that were available at DuPont in Dallas, you know, to get things done, slowed down the process and led to a discouraged attitude. So I didn't factor those into this. I must admit that it would take me as long to get a thesis as I thought. You know, that was just a miscalculation, I guess. It was still, you know, it's still worth it, I guess. So it didn't bother me that, you know, being a student. I thought that it would. I mean, I thought that my classroom skills were not that good when I was a full-time student. And being out of class for so long, I said, you know, this could be a problem. You know, studying and remembering the proper techniques, you know, whatever. But fortunately, the course requirements were less for me than they were for other students. And then the courses I did take covered a lot of contemporary biology that I learned as it happened. So sometimes, you know, and oftentimes we recall that stuff better if we were part of the process.
Right.
So there were two core courses that our program teaches, and, you know, they were membrane biology and molecular physiology were right down my line. So that wasn't a problem at all. Money, you know, a graduate stipend is far less than my salary at DuPont, but I had managed to save quite a bit of money because I was making good money, even in Dallas. You know, by that time, I was making more money than I was spending, and my expenses were low. And when I got to DuPont, then I clearly made more money than I knew what to do with, so I saved quite a bit of that, and that got me a nest egg, and then I'd bought and sold some property and built up quite a bit of equity that I could take to, actually, I bought and sold twice in Texas and then once in Wilmington, and so I brought enough money even to this housing market to put a down payment on a house, and then that coincided with the time that Lauren and I started sharing our lives together in a common domain. So she was able to make the payments after I made the down payment, and we're not in that same situation. I'm contributing a little bit more to the payments now, but we're sitting in that same house. But I still had to watch money quite a bit, so cut back on some of the things that I was used to, but probably was a good idea anyway. And now, you know, I'm back making more money than I can spend, but I don't have any financial responsibilities to speak of. So if you don't have kids that you spend $30,000 a year to go put the Tufts, you know.
Right. So you felt like the knowledge you were picking up as you went and learned in your different jobs, careers, kept up with the textbook knowledge then?
Mm-hmm. You know, I never realized that until I took that course. I mean, I never knew how universal that the knowledge I got from that experience is to cell biology and cell physiology, how the concepts that emerge from that can be applied to a whole number of pathways and processes within cells. I just focused it on with respect to cholesterol metabolism and membrane biology and I knew that ligands and receptors there were other systems around too, so I guess that's not entirely true. But You know, just it's sort of like studying a cell by focusing on one particular aspect of the cell that gradually you just learn about the whole workings of the cell. You know, if the carburetor in your car breaks down, then you begin to fix the carburetor. Well, then to understand how it works, you got to know what feeds into the carburetor and what the carburetor does. It provides a gas air mixture to cylinders to be combusted. Well, then you thought, well, what do cylinders do, you know? How does combustion occur? And what cylinders, this motion goes up and down, it causes something like this to turn on the wheels, you know? So it's kind of a way to, if you just, to understand globally what's going on in a process by just kind of focusing on one, beginning to focus on one particular aspect. And I just didn't realize how dimensionless that is until I took this course.
Well, what about your fellow graduate students and your interactions with them and fitting back into the graduate student lifestyle? You're a little bit older than they are. You've had a tremendous amount of more experience. You've been an independent researcher.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these people are probably just out there undergraduate. So how did that work out?
Well, I think that worked very well. I think I admired them because they were learning the same things that I knew, but learning it much earlier. Mm-hmm. And I think that they admired me because of what I had accomplished and just going back to school.
Right.
So there was a mutual admiration there. And I was still, well, still am. So this is kind of an urban campus. I mean, there's no dorms here, you know, so it's like most graduates. So there's not a whole lot of interaction between students outside of these walls. So I wasn't alienated in that respect, because there wasn't, everybody was sort of apart. We all went in different directions when we went home. And then, we did do things as students together. We used to play male faculty postdocs and students, we used to play basketball together as a bubble, which is called the Chinese YMCA, right across on the other side of that building right there. It's pretty rustic, but we would go over and play basketball every Friday, and bad knees and all, I used to go over there and play that and stop. But I think that helped them accept me, you know. So it was a good relationship, and I think maybe that kind of has helped. And then, you know, I've always been around younger people anyway, because mainly a lot of it because of this football officiating I've done. I started in Texas and with high school games in college, and so it's the same age level, although I'm getting older, but I'm still associated with the same kind of age group of kids every year for a 3-month period of time, so I can somewhat relate to them. And, you know, I think that helps me to fit in with younger groups better. And it certainly has helped me in becoming advisor and counselor to these new students. I mean, that's why they made me one, because I'm closer to them, because I just went through that more recently. And then I kind of interact and with students, as opposed to the older faculty are a little bit more removed or so. So all in all, that I was well accepted and thoroughly enjoyed the relationship I had with my classmates, and I think they did enjoy my presence as well.
Okay, and to go back to what we kind of talked about yesterday in terms of the biochemist coming from a chemical background, how did what were the backgrounds of these graduate students coming in terms of the fields of their education? Because by this time, you know, programs are changing in terms of discipline, so you could like major in molecular biology or genetics, or you know, and what does genetics mean as opposed to molecular biology and biochemistry?
Mm-hmm.
you know, how did you see your kind of background meshing with theirs? You had said that basically you had said that, you know, that it's easier to teach a chemist biology than a biologist chemistry.
Right. Well, there are no chemistry majors applying to our graduate program. No. I mean, I see every application that's come through in, well, ever since I've been appointed to this faculty. So there are no chemistry majors. They're all, we've had a couple of engineering, well, we have one engineering student now, but he kind of more biomedical engineering. But we've had, all of them have been biology. But you're right. It's no longer just pure biology. It's either molecular biology or genetics. Biochemistry, just a focused degree in biochemistry. I don't think they're any less qualified because, well, I guess because knowledge is so specialized these days, it's not that you almost need to have a specialized degree, whether it's molecular biology, to advance. The extension of that is that it used to be that graduate students would say, do one project for their PhD dissertation and then just go off and do a postdoc on a completely different field. And then maybe if they got a faculty appointment, they might take a little bit of that knowledge or that little bit of that field with them, you know. But now, the going philosophy is that graduate students who begin who do a dissertation, say, in signal transduction, want to do a postdoc in signal transduction. And then obviously want to get a faculty position and write grants on signal transduction. So backing that up a little bit further, if they have a degree in, say, genetics, well, that might not fit well into a signal transduction type pathway. But molecular biology or cloning might be a better fit. So I don't know if students are trying to, when I read applications too, I get the feeling that students are deciding what areas they're really most keenly interested in studying and deciding that they want to study that as a graduate student and as a postdoc and wherever else, rather than saying, you know, I just want to go to school and learn and something's going to open up and the best laboratory or one of those faculty members up there is going to have a really neat project that's going to light my imagination. And I'll study it for a dissertation, and then I'll see what opens up after that. So that's the mindset, I think, of most students these days, and they just start tracking at a much earlier age. And probably puts them in a better position because maybe they've got this history of being part of this field, not, you know, moving about.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of territory today, so thanks very much.